This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Dallas cop guilty of murder. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Wednesday, October 2nd. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A 31-year-old female police officer has been found guilty of murder by a jury in Dallas for the shooting death of an unarmed man.
The impeachment inquiry into President Trump gains momentum today with a briefing by the Inspector General from the State Department.
As the lung illnesses continue to grow, the governor of Ohio is calling on the state legislature to ban most flavored e-cigarettes.
And tips for parents who are worried their kid might be vaping.
We've gotten very worked up over a problem that is linked to vaping, but it's not. The people that are ending up in the hospital with lung illnesses, almost without exception, were also vaping THC.
Jane O'Donnell at USA Today on discussing vaping with your kids and how to get them to quit if they've started. She's here in about 25 minutes. The impeachment inquiry into President Trump picks up steam this week regarding the administration's dealings with Ukraine. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Reuters says the impeachment inquiry into President Trump will feature congressional staffers who are due to attend a briefing today by the State Department's Inspector General. Following a whistleblower complaint last week, Democrats are looking into Mr. Trump's request to Ukraine's president during a July phone call to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden. A rough transcript of the phone call indicated no specific quid pro quo involving U.S. foreign aid in exchange for the Ukraine probe. Critics say it was implied. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Kurt Volker, the U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations, who resigned last week, will be deposed tomorrow. Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, will be deposed next Friday. A jury in Dallas has found a former police officer guilty of murder for accidentally walking into a neighbor's apartment, thinking it was her own, and fatally shooting an unarmed man who she thought was an intruder. The killing 1 year ago of 26-year-old Botham Jean, an accountant for PwC, sparked street protests when prosecutors initially opted to bring the lesser charge of manslaughter against 31-year-old cop Amber Geiger. Allison Jean is the mother of the victim.
My life has not been the same. It's just been like a roller coaster. I cannot sleep. I cannot eat.
Ms. Geiger, on the force 4 years, testified in her own defense, tearfully expressing regret for shooting Mr. Jean as he sat eating ice cream when she entered the apartment, but saying she had believed her life was in danger when she pulled the trigger. She's white, he's black. Ms. Geiger faces life in prison. Texas, by the way, is among the states where juries can decide on sentencing. The panel adjourned by late yesterday afternoon. Analysis of this case, the trial, and the verdict from attorney Chris Lewis with the firm Crane, Lewis & Brogdon in Dallas, where this has been gripping news. Chris, your reaction?
Well, I was surprised. As you say, everyone's been here in Dallas has been captivated by this trial and the implications. It was a case where the jury had to decide whether it was a murder, and if it was a murder, was there a defense that applied that would have made it, for lack of a better term, a justifiable homicide, or was it a manslaughter? I was fully expecting the jury to come back with something, probably a manslaughter conviction. I was shocked when they came back with a murder conviction.
All right, it was really a strange case, right? I mean, she essentially walks into the wrong apartment, thinks it's hers, thinks the guy Botham Jean is an intruder. He's sitting there eating ice cream, right? He's some accountant. And she shot him twice.
Yeah, I mean, this was a fascinating fact pattern, one that I doubt we will ever see in our lifetime again. She had just gotten off a 13-and-a-half-hour shift. She didn't have, as a police officer, she didn't have any drugs in her system. She didn't have any alcohol in her system. She just simply went to the wrong apartment on the wrong floor. It was the identical apartment that she lives on, or that she lives in, just missed it by one floor. And what was interesting during the course of this case, the defense seemed to be one of a mistake of fact. As long as a person made what the jury determined was a reasonable mistake of fact, then if the mistake of fact, if it in fact had been true, were they justified in using that force, she would have been in that situation. So I think the question really came down to, did the jury believe this was a reasonable mistake of fact? And obviously from their verdict, they did not.
Listen, I'm no legal expert. I'm not a cop. I don't pretend to know the stresses involved with being a cop. But to walk in and not recognize your own apartment strikes me as very strange.
It is. Now, I had the opportunity to listen to all the evidence. And the evidence was that you use a key card to enter these apartments, almost like you do in a hotel. And when she went to enter the key card, the door was open. She knew that she had closed it. And then as she began to open it, she could hear some shuffling around. At that point in time, she opened it all the way. She drew her service weapon, which she had on her. She gave Botham Jean, she gave him commands to show your hands. Her testimony was that he continued to come out here, and that's when she delivered two shots, with one of them hitting him center mass, and that being the fatal shot. So it didn't sound like she had the opportunity to open the door and to appreciate how things in the apartment might have been different.
We're speaking with Chris Lewis, an attorney based in Dallas. He's with the firm Crane, Lewis & Brogdon. We're talking about the former Dallas police officer Amber Geiger, who's been convicted of murder. I don't know that this was necessarily defensible. Technically, it was, I guess. Would you have defended her any differently?
I guess in hindsight, we all would have done something differently. I thought that the defense did a good job. The prosecution made it clear, even pre-indictment, they did not feel this was a manslaughter case. They felt like it was an intentional killing where there was no justifiable defense. Now, the defense took the position that this was an intentional killing, but it was done because she believed that she was in her own apartment, and under the Castle Doctrine, you can defend your residence with lethal force. So the whole question, the whole trial seemed to center around how reasonable was her belief that this was her apartment. Now, Gordon, one of the interesting things that occurred was the Texas Rangers went out and they interviewed. This was the third and fourth floor that we were dealing with. They interviewed everyone on the third and fourth floor to determine how many individuals had made that same mistake. And almost one out of four individuals on the third and fourth floor had that made that same mistake. So I think that the defense did a good job of bringing out why this was a mistake, why they felt it was a mistake, and why they felt like it was reasonable. In the end, the jury just rejected that argument.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Lewis, attorney with the firm Crane, Lewis & Brogdon in Dallas. 14 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Your favorite Netflix show gets canceled before the second season. You draw last pick in your fantasy football draft. You're roused from sleep by the construction outside your window the one day you can sleep in. We can't change those things, but ClearBank is changing one unfair thing: how hard it is to get fundraising as an entrepreneur. They know it's scary to put your house up as collateral for a bank loan, and how scary and time-consuming it can be pitching investors, not to mention giving up pieces of your company if the investor likes it. ClearBank believes that fundraising can be easy. ClearBank has created a new way for founders to raise money without tapping into their personal resources. They can fund you anywhere from $10,000 to $10 million in a single day. All you need to do is fill out their 20-minute term sheet to get started. ClearBank works with e-commerce companies, SaaS companies, and yes, mobile apps too. They funded thousands of entrepreneurs and are on track to invest over $1 billion this year. As a special gift to our listeners, qualifying companies that get approved by ClearBank will get $1,000 of additional capital. To sign up, visit clearbank.com/Gordon. That's clearbank.com/Gordon. ClearBank, stop pitching and get back to doing what you love, growing your business. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine is calling on the legislature in Columbus to pass a ban on most flavored e-cigarettes, saying he was alarmed by a nationwide surge in a sometimes deadly lung disease linked to vaping nicotine or marijuana e-cigarettes.
Mr. DeWine, a Republican, said he wanted the General Assembly to ban all flavored vaping products besides tobacco flavor, including mint and menthol flavored products.
By doing so, we can interrupt the cycle of early use. And if we do that, we will reduce the health risk and we'll certainly save lives.
The Centers for Disease Control has connected vaping to at least 12 deaths and more than 800 cases of a mysterious respiratory illness. Governors in Michigan, New York, and Rhode Island have all restricted sales of flavored e-cigarette products in recent weeks. Mr. DeWine said he did not have the authority to issue an executive order banning the products in Ohio. Last week, Massachusetts banned all vaping products outright for 4 months while it examined new regulations and laws. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, setting a defiant tone, the Trump administration is resisting Congress's access to impeachment witnesses, even as House Democrats warn such efforts themselves could amount to an impeachable offense. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo tried to delay five current and former officials from providing documents and testimony in the impeachment inquiry that could lead to charges against President Trump. But Democrats were able to set closed-door depositions for tomorrow for a former special envoy to Ukraine and next week for the ousted U.S. ambassador. The same jury that convicted a white Dallas police officer in the fatal shooting of her black neighbor returns to court today to consider her sentence, a penalty that could be anywhere from 5 years to life in prison. Amber Geiger, who said she mistook the man's apartment for her own, was convicted of murder in a verdict that drew tears of relief from his family. Ben Crump represented the family of Botham Jean.
This verdict is for Trayvon Martin. It's for Michael Brown. It's for Sandra Bland. It's for Tamir Rice. It's for Eric Gardner.
And Geiger's defense attorneys say she deserves a light sentence because she acted out of confusion and fear that she found an intruder in her home. Hundreds of college students are striking to condemn the police shooting of their classmate yesterday during surging violence at Hong Kong pro-democracy protests that marred China's National Day. It was the first time a protester had been struck by gunfire since the protests began in June. Dangerous, record-breaking heat is taking over the Midwest, South, and East. In Ohio, classes at Columbus City Schools were canceled yesterday due to the heat. Heat records tumbled yesterday in numerous cities, including New Orleans at 95, Nashville at 98, and Mobile at 96. At the same time, the West felt like winter. Temperatures dropped to 37 degrees in Billings, Montana, and 47 in Idaho Falls. And residents from New Mexico to Michigan are under flood alerts. The job market is still strong, but some cities appear to have more pep than others. According to Glassdoor's latest report, the top three cities for job growth are Boston, Philadelphia, and Atlanta. The top cities for pay growth are San Francisco, Atlanta, and Los Angeles. Warehouse Associates saw the fastest pay growth in September, up 6.3% on the year.
Very good. All those places, by the way, come with plenty of traffic.
That's true.
Certainly Atlanta, L.A.
Yes, Boston, Philadelphia, yes, all of them.
Thanks, yeah. Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Now that autumn has arrived, the clock is ticking louder on certain financial moves you might want to make before the end of 2019. Here's a list from Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic. Russ set this up.
Prior to tax reform, there were a lot of tax return or late year tax action items that people could do, primarily focused around increasing their itemized deductions. Well, even back then, only about 30% of the Americans were itemizing, so not everyone, it wouldn't apply for everyone. Now, even fewer people are itemizing because they've increased the standard deductions. But basically, the idea behind bunching is that even if you don't have enough itemized deductions to take advantage of that strategy every year, you might be able to double up or bunch up certain deductions, like charities. Say you gave $3,000 in a year and it's not enough for you to get over the standard deduction. Maybe you don't do it 1 year, but you give $6,000 the next year, and maybe that is enough to get into, you know, to take advantage of itemizing. So it's really just an idea of, you know, maybe skipping some of these elective costs 1 year and doubling up on the next so that you can take advantage of the itemizing strategy.
Also, go through harvesting gains and losses.
Well, this one still applies. I mean, you can still, and this is going to be something that people, investors are going to hear about, investors who have, you know, stocks, mutual funds, and taxable accounts. Year-end, you do want to perhaps at least consider looking at selling some positions at a loss and using that money to potentially shelter up to $3,000 in ordinary income. That one, that strategy still applies whether you itemize or not.
Got it. We're speaking with Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic. He's written a piece about 10 financial tips to follow as the calendar turns to fall. What about open enrollment season?
Well, that's, you know, now's the time, or in a few weeks, that is going to be the time when people look at their employer benefits packages, you know, health care, 401k. And quite frankly, a lot of companies offer, you know, smaller programs, you know, pet insurance, legal plans, whatever. I just think it's time that, you know, you spend a little bit more time and effort trying to understand what benefits you potentially could have in the coming year. There has been some studies indicating that people, you know, they cringe at doing this exercise and they don't spend a lot of time at it. But, you know, truthfully, it could be worth your while.
Point number nine, take an inventory of belongings.
And this is something that, again, I don't think it necessarily has to be done at year end, but it's a good annual reminder. How many people go around their house and videotape what they got, or take cell phones of their big ticket items, their, you know, their electronics, their furniture, artwork, whatever. I mean, clothes even. I mean, if you got burglarized, or if you you know, sustained a fire damage, it would be very helpful to have, you know, an inventory, a written record, and even a photographic record of what you have to, for example, to help bolster or support your insurance claims.
Thanks, Russ. Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This Morning with Gordon Deal podcast is brought to you by Privacy.com. For me, shopping online with Privacy.com is safer. How? By using Privacy.com's virtual credit or debit cards. They protect my identity and bank info when shopping online. Remember the recent theft of financial data of millions of online shoppers from a very large online retailer? Privacy.com's virtual accounts are held to the same security standards as your bank. It's PCI DSS compliant, which makes info online secure with military-grade encryption. Privacy.com can also help you take control of your finances by setting spending limits for when you tend to order too much takeout, or by monitoring recurring payments or subscriptions. Head to privacy.com/Gordon to sign up and start shopping. As a special treat for our listeners, new customers will automatically get $5 to spend on your first purchase. Yep, that's free money to use on any online purchase. Go to privacy.com/Gordon and sign up now.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for being with us. Wednesday, October 2. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. State Department Inspector General briefs congressional staffers today on requests for Ukraine documents. Former Dallas cop guilty of murder for shooting an unarmed man when she accidentally walked into the wrong apartment. Reports say Microsoft today will announce a revamp of its Surface laptop. Nats over the Brewers in the NL wildcard, A's and Rays tonight. And the 9-year-old boy who entered a 5K race but mistakenly won the 10K. That story in about 20 minutes. As use of electronic cigarettes by middle and high school students has skyrocketed, so has the number of parents unaware they have nicotine-addicted children. Here are tips for parents worried about their kids and vaping from Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. Jane, give us advice.
Well, my biggest advice would be not to freak out, because we've gotten very worked up over a problem that is linked to vaping, but it's not the people that are ending up in the hospital with lung illnesses, almost without exception, were also vaping THC. So if your child is vaping nicotine and THC, and they're getting their THC from street dealers, which most kids would have to under age 18 or 21, that's what you need to worry about the most. Vaping, nicotine is risky, but not risky like that. It's not ending. It's not leading, sending young people to the hospital. But it is a very difficult substance, nicotine, that is, to get off of.
Kids are secretive, Jane. So, what are the signs that your kids are vaping?
Among the things I mentioned in the story were things like getting up from the table a lot, having to run off and excusing themselves. You know, kids might not want to hang around with their parents too much at the dinner table, but an inability to just spend any length of time in the same room, I guess I would say, more than usual. One of the pulmonologists I spoke to said, kind of the sneaky, what's the word, like averting their eyes, like looking guilty. That's one of them. Certainly excessive coughing, breathing problems. Like if your kid plays a sport, for example, and then they're getting way more winded than they used to, that's an important sign, because this is, perhaps ironically, very popular among sports teams, even though it really hurts the young people's endurance. And then, of course, you find the device. That's a good, that's a pretty likely sign.
We're speaking with Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called, Is My Kid Vaping? If So, What? And How Do I Help Them Quit? So what do you do if you find out your kids are addicted to vaping?
Well, I would certainly, the first stop in all cases should be the doctor's office. But what I'm hearing from talking to school nurses is that the pediatricians often don't know what to suggest. This is a new thing, having to get young people off of nicotine. I mean, they're having to go through some pretty serious programs. They're being pulled out of school. They're having to take classes, you know, remotely, having to spend time every day after school at some places in these special kind of cessation programs, they call them. There are medications that are approved for this sort of thing, but none of it's really recommended. None of them were recommended for young people, but of course neither was nicotine. So the risk of your kid being harmed by nicotine replacement therapy, which is generally over the counter, so one of the gums or the patches is pretty remote. So you really do have to get them off it as soon as you can, and also look at why they're vaping nicotine, if that is, because in many cases it's simply peer pressure. But is it peer pressure that's going to lead to far more dangerous peer pressure? The psychiatrist from Hazleton Betty Ford Center that I spoke to said it really is. If your young person is vaping nicotine, particularly at some of the very young ages we're hearing, as young as 12 or 13 in middle school, that if they're hanging around with kids that's going to be bad news. If they're doing that, they're going to be ahead of the curve on all the risky behavior, because even though the kid says everyone's doing it at school, it's everyone in his group, his or her group. It's not everyone. It's really 1 in 5, 1 in 4 kids in high school and middle school tops.
Thanks, Jane. Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you're with us, and welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know the Miami Dolphins have certainly given their fans plenty of reasons to drink so far this season, but $700 for a beer is enough to turn away even the most desperate fans looking to forget their troubles. That's how much one fan paid for two beers he purchased at the Dolphins-Chargers game this past Sunday, thanks to a scam pulled off by a vendor. According to the Miami Herald, the roving beer vendor brought two beers to a fan and swiped their card using his own personal credit card device instead of the one provided by the vending company, charging the fans $724. When the fan thankfully got a phone alert about a potential scam, which displayed the vendor's name, the fan contacted authorities, who later arrested the 33-year-old. The customer got his money back, and the alleged thief now faces charges of grand theft.
Wow. had to invest in one of these credit card
right.
readers of his own.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine this is the first time this has happened.
Yeah.
Or if it is, this whole thing makes no sense. Again, why? How would anybody think they wouldn't get caught? doing this. I mean, you're sitting there, you're a vendor, you're wearing a name tag. I mean, you know, there are so many ways that this could go wrong. Apparently, he's been working as a vendor for a year for this company as well.
No kidding.
But so I don't know if this is the first time he's done this, at least I guess the first time he's got caught. But how could you think you wouldn't get caught doing this?
A roving beer vendor.
Yes, that's how they described him. Uh-huh. Yes, walking around, not behind a counter.
That's
in other
I'm
words,
thinking, right?
Yeah. It's someone who's, you know, walks around with the beer. You know how it goes.
Would you like a receipt for that? No.
Right.
I'll just trust him not being charged $700 for a couple.
And what
of beers.
Would he have done if they did want a receipt for that? Because he didn't find out because of the receipt. They found out because their card company called them. So yeah,
goodness,
what would they
gracious.
Even done? It makes no sense at
right.
all. And speaking of things that make no sense, this, Gordon, should go without saying, but in case your mother never went over this with you, taunting a lion is not a good idea and should never be attempted. Since most of us know that already, people continue to scratch their heads over a viral video making the rounds that shows a woman at the Bronx Zoo in New York City last weekend appearing to taunt a lion after she somehow climbed into its den. The unidentified woman was seen waving at the animal from just a few feet away while the lion, looking understandably confused, stares back. The woman then does a little dance before appearing to turn back, and the camera then turns off. The man who filmed the incident and posted it to Instagram told local TV that he first thought the bizarre incident was just part of the exhibit, but later realized something was amiss with the way the woman was acting. A spokesperson told Fox News that the zoo has a zero-tolerance policy when it comes to violating the barriers, though it's unclear what, if any, action has been taken against this woman.
That's insane. I watched that video.
Yeah. I mean, she just looks cool, calm, collected, just like, hey, I'm going to hang out with the lion. And the lion is, what, 10 feet away?
Yeah.
I mean, that lion could just could pounce and be on her in
right.
2 seconds.
I mean, she'd have no chance
right.
at all.
No. And everybody, you could just hear a lot of sort of nervous chatter around
yes.
her. Like, people are not sure if she's supposed to be there or not. But some people are kind of like, I'm not so sure about this.
That was unbelievable. And I couldn't quite tell from the video, but I think normally with those barriers, there's like a big like trench you have
yeah.
to get across.
Right. It didn't appear that this was the case.
It didn't look like it. Like
yeah.
she could have just, I don't know, sort of broad jumped to get in there.
Yeah, it didn't look like she needed to do too much climbing to get in. I have a feeling that's going to change for future visitors.
That is... Wow. I mean, she should count her lucky stars.
Yes.
I guess if she's in jail or whatever fine she's facing.
Wherever she is, count
still,
those lucky stars.
Still count the lucky stars. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, what's longer, your watch list or your reading list? For me, it's definitely my reading list, but there are not enough hours in the day. Then I found Blinkist. Blinkist is the app that condenses the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books down to 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. It's great on a commute. I like it as a refresher for books like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm catching up right now on all kinds of history that I never learned in school. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning. Try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for joining us. The total fees that we pay to withdraw money from out-of-network ATMs have hit a record $4.72, a rise of 33% on average over the past 10 years. That's according to a new analysis by the personal finance website Bankrate.com. That average $4.72 fee includes a fee by the ATM owner for non-customers, as well as the fees banks slap on their own customers from withdrawing from out of the network. The most common surcharge fee was around $3, but charges varied by area. The Bankrate chief financial analyst, Greg McBride, told MarketWatch that the good news is they're all avoidable if you stay in network. He says, plan ahead as to where and when you make your ATM withdrawals. That might be as simple as looking on your bank's website or app to find the nearest in-network ATM location, or in a pinch, getting cash back at the point of sale when you make a debit card transaction at, say, a grocery store or maybe a pharmacy. Most banks and most merchants do not charge to get cash back at that point of sale, so it's the same as a free
ATM withdrawal. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court and House Democrats say Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has an obvious conflict of interest in the Ukraine scandal and will likely be a key witness in the congressional impeachment inquiry. Three Democratic chairmen say Pompeo may be involved in a blatant cover-up and a clear abuse of power, and given his potential role, he should not be making any decisions regarding witness testimony or document production in order to protect himself or the president. That warning, sent to the State Department's Deputy Secretary of State, came after a bitter exchange between Pompeo and House Democrats over the scheduled depositions of five State Department officials involved in communications between Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer, and Ukrainian government officials. South Korea's military says North Korea fired a ballistic missile from the sea today, a suggestion that it may have tested an underwater launch missile for the first time in 3 years, ahead of a resumption of nuclear talks with the U.S. this weekend. The North Korea missile flew about 280 miles after liftoff from an unspecified place in the waters off the northeastern coast. South Korean and U.S. intelligence authorities are analyzing more details of the launch. Top Democratic White House hopefuls took in a collective $56 million over the last 3 months, while President Trump and his allies swapped them all by raising $125 million. The staggering sum highlights the cash gulf between the parties. A federal judge has rejected the Trump administration's bid to dismiss lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of a 2017 decision to downsize two sprawling national monuments in Utah. The decision means the legal challenges seeking to return the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments to their original sizes can move forward. The season has come to an end for the Brewers while the Nationals move on in the baseball playoffs. The Nationals beat the Brewers in the National League wild card game 4-3 in dramatic fashion. Ernie Johnson on TBS had the call as Juan Soto delivered a bases-loaded single against closer Josh Hader.
Wide drive, base hit to right. That'll score one, that'll score two as the ball gets away from Grisham and Wright. That's going to score three runs, and the Washington Nationals have the lead.
The Nationals carry a 9-game winning streak into their best-of-5 NL Division Series against the league-best Dodgers.
Trent Grisham, the rookie, I think will not sleep for another week after playing that into a three-run single. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A 9-year-old boy wound up winning a 10K race in Minnesota after he missed a turn on a separate 5K race and ended up on the much longer course. Cade Lovell of St. Cloud told Fox 9 that he started off running the St. Francis Franny Flyer 5K in Sartell, Minnesota, two Saturdays ago. At one point during the run, he told the St. Cloud Times that a woman told him to keep going when he approached the 5K turn, so he kept going straight. Remember, he's 9 years old, so when he didn't cross the finish line of the 5K, his mother, Heather, said she thought her son was having an off day, but when he didn't show up, her concerns obviously grew. She started driving the route looking for him. She was eventually able to track him down. He finished the 10K in just over 48 minutes, a minute faster than the 40-year-old woman who ended up in second place. So he didn't just win his age group, he won the whole thing. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.